You are listening to Breaking Boundaries with Brad Palumbo.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks to all of you guys who have been listening. We're on episode 13 now, I believe, and we're getting thousands of downloads per episode already. So make sure you're subscribed. If you're watching us on YouTube, click down below and make sure you're subscribed to us on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. My guest today is Cliff Maloney. He's the president of Young Americans for Liberty. Cliff, thanks for coming on.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
So maybe to start, obviously I'm familiar with your work. We go back, but tell listeners a little bit about what YAL is and what you guys do.
Yeah, so Young Americans for Liberty, we are a college-based organization here in the United States. And pretty much in a nutshell, we recruit college students and then we deploy them to go out into the country and try to knock doors for Liberty candidates. Broken down a little further, you know, we've got over 20,000 dues-paying members across the country. And, you know, we try to really focus on reaching people with the principles of liberty. We kind of don't fit into the red or blue mold like a lot of other organizations, policy shops. What we try to focus on are free markets, civil liberties, and peace. And the students get excited about that. And then what we're looking to do is harness that energy, right? Find a way to take that passion and give them an outlet. And that's what we do. That's why we go out and knock those doors. Our program's called Operation Win at the Door. And it's been a fun couple of years as we've kind of shifted the organization in that direction. And I think it's really giving a lot of our activists a great purpose. And we're seeing some pretty tremendous results.
So one thing that distinguishes YAL from some other political organizations is that you guys have decided to start at the local and state level for some of your big wins. So while other people, you know, pour money into long shot libertarian bids for president or something like that, you guys have gone out there and gotten tons of people elected to the state legislature, right? So talk to me a little bit about, you know, what states have you been the most successful? How many people have you gotten in? And why start at the state and local level?
Yeah, so let me give your viewers a little peek behind the curtain. So after the presidential race in 2016, I spent some time working for one of your previous guests, Senator Rand Paul. And after the presidential race, I kind of took a look at the movement as a whole, and I had some conversations with a lot of the, let's say, liberty movement leaders. And I just said, look, you know, where do we go from here? Do we double down on politics? Do we try to stick with education? Do we have a mix of each? If we do politics, how do we make a real change? You know, what's a long-term strategy? And as a former math teacher, I put pen to paper and started to understand, okay, you know, how much money do people have to spend on some of these big presidential races versus U.S. Senate races versus congressional, state Senate, state House, even mayor races and school board, right? We kind of looked at all these numbers. And when you do the math on how much of an impact you can make as a grassroots organization, it really was kind of like a slap in the face when we did when we put these numbers together and we looked at it. It was like, hello, the biggest opening for an ideological movement is at the state level. The state has so much power. People understand it. So you don't confuse activists. They're still excited about it. You're not, you know, talking about like a council member or something where people don't understand. Everyone understands what a state rep or a state delegate or a state assembly person is, right? And so the idea was, what does it take to get elected to Congress? Well, either you're a self-funder or you served in the state legislature, right? So that's the pipeline we're trying to build. And then we said, okay, so to run for state legislature, you know, what are the requirements? And to be frank, you know, you can be Johnny on the block, and if you can raise 30, 40, 50,000 bucks, in some of these states, if you raise, you know, 1,000 bucks, you can win a seat. And what happens, Brad, this is the part that I think it's kind of not sad, but it's kind of, it's ironic when you think about it. If you're a local activist and you have a comment or an opinion on a situation or you have a policy or some sort of solution, you know, the local headline will read, you know, if I had a comment, local schmuck thinks we need to audit the Fed, right? But when you're elected as a state rep and you get, you know, 3,000 people to vote for you, well, now all of a sudden when the reporters, you know, print your stuff, it's, you know, State Representative Maloney how weighs in on the Federal Reserve, right? And it sounds stupid, but those are the microphones. When we win these races, and we've won 179 since we launched this program. When you win those races, it literally gives you the microphone, right? You have credibility now, and you can go out and you can speak. It doesn't mean we're going to pass liberty legislation tomorrow, but it means that the people that are guaranteed to be listened to, or at least to be heard, we now have some of those seats, and that's part of the whole plan. So that's, if I had to say, why do we go local? You know, I would say it's because you can win. You can win with a liberty message. You're not getting drowned out by millions and millions of dollars. And to be frank, I usually will call people out. I won't call you out, Brad. But I ask people, do you know who your state rep is? Like, if you had to put like $10,000 on it, would you know who your state rep is? Most people have no idea. And that's a good thing when we're trying to win elections, because we can beat the establishment at their own name ID game. Because we can put 10 to 12 students in the district for 30 to 40 days, talk to every voter, sometimes talking to every voter that we're targeting twice or three times. So you're able to penetrate in a way that if you have, you know, a $3 to $5 million congressional race, or heck, a $10 to $20 million congressional race, there's no way you can move the needle. So that's why we focus locally. We think we can win, and because we think we can make a huge impact on those races.
So I remember when I was a college student in about 2017, I went to a YaleCon event, and I'm a native Rhode Islander, Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So I remember there was a Rhode Island congressman, state representative there, who talked about how the fact Rhode Island's a blue area. So I'm like, how did this dude get elected as a libertarian Republican in like a massively Democrat supermajority? And he's like, well, the state districts are small enough that I met every single voter. So it is an impressive strategy, and that stuck with me to this day.
Brad Filippi in Rhode Island, he's now the minority leader, which isn't saying much. I think there's a total of 9 Republicans. They might have actually lost the seat, but in the entire state house, yeah, one of our guys is now the leader. And once again, doesn't mean anything good is going to come out of Rhode Island for liberty, but it means that, you know, we've got a guy in a position where he can now speak out and bring that pure message that, you know, a lot of people just haven't heard.
Yeah, no, exactly. But so how about this time around? I know you guys did really well. You kind of exceeded expectations in November. So what were the results this November?
Yeah, so it was a glorious night for liberty and those that believe in our principles. We had 153 state legislative candidates on the ballot on November 3rd. We had, I think, 5 of them that ended up going to recount. But as of today, all of them are final, the results. We won 130, excuse me, lost 30 races, 123 wins. I'm getting so excited, I'm losing the numbers here. So 123 wins, 30 losses. To be frank with you, I mean, look, if we would have came in with 80 or 90 wins, it would have been a very, very, very good year. So now we're excited. We've actually got everybody coming down to Florida this month for an event with what we call our Hazlet Legislator Coalition. So the group of legislators that we get elected at Young Americans for Liberty, you know, they join Hazlet, which is named after Henry Hazlet. Let me see. Actually, I might even have, yeah. Economics in one lesson. So I promise you, this isn't canned. This is just always on my desk. We have the Hazlet Coalition to bring all the legislators together to talk shop, to talk strategy, to talk about shared liberty bills, strategies to stop anti-liberty bills. And so it's really exciting to kind of see all of the work that our students have done. This is the fruit of our labor, right? This is the product that we've been building. And to be frank, you know, one of the things that we care about at YAL is holding our legislators accountable, which is, you know, very different than a lot of groups, because we believe in an ideology, right? We don't have a loyalty to party. We have a loyalty to principle. And I think that for a lot of people makes me and makes YAL an enemy, because we live in a partisan world, right? So it's like, you know, why aren't you more Team Red? You know, the Libertarian Party, why aren't you more Team Libertarian? It's like, look, I will use any vehicle I can if somebody actually believes in limiting government and giving power back to the people. The strategy that has worked the best has been to run Liberty Republicans, people that are actually going to follow the Constitution. We have endorsed Libertarian Party members. In this cycle, we actually won a race. We took out a Democrat incumbent in Wyoming with a gentleman who ran under the LP banner, Marshall Burt. And so I tell people, look, I don't have time for the partisan politics. I just want to make Liberty win. Come to me with a candidate that is principled and viable, because that's our test. We just care about those two things. If you can win and you're principled, those are the two things we look at when we endorse candidates. And so November 3rd was a fantastic night. Our overall goal is to elect 250 of these Rand Paul type candidates by the end of 2022. And I honestly think, and this is a question for your viewers, I think my opinion is that if we have 250 hardcore liberty legislators out there across the country, that we could have a real foundation to move the country forward. We could start to play the long game. And over the next 10 years, those people are going to matriculate up, right? They're right. going to become governors. They're going to become congressmen. They're going to become senators. And I think that's important. And look, you can do the math. It's only 5% of the country is state legislative seats. There's about 5,400 seats in the lower chambers if you include Nebraska's unicameral. So it's only 5%. But the cool thing is, this is just the beginning, right? We're going to continue doing Operation Win at the Door. We're going to continue to focus on state legislative seats. But I'd argue this is one of the first real plans for getting the message of liberty out there and for obtaining these microphones for our principals.
So I'd be interested to kind of explore this a little bit. You mentioned that it's not, oh, we only endorse Republicans, we only work for Republicans. But in many cases, you are backing Republican candidates from that kind of Rand Paul Republican, libertarian-leaning Republican vein. I've actually poked around through your candidate survey before, and I've seen the kind of stuff that you ask about. So I'm wondering, I doubt there's any one issue that's a litmus test, right? But where do you draw the line in terms of who is a liberty Republican enough versus who is not?
Yeah, so there's tons of variables. I always break things down based on those free markets, civil liberties, and peace. And to be frank, most Republicans will have good rhetoric on the first part, right? The free markets, they'll say, oh, you know, cut the regulation, cut the spending, cut the taxes, and everybody, it's a kumbaya moment. Well, then we need to talk about privacy, right? You look at Edward Snowden as a hero, or do you think he's a traitor to the country? Because, Barack Obama called him a traitor, but obviously, you know, most Republicans, when it comes to privacy, you know, they haven't been strong on the Fourth Amendment. So there's a big dichotomy there. Obviously, gun rights, once again, I think most Republicans are pretty solid on that. I honestly think foreign policy is probably one of our biggest, we call it a throwaway question. And I don't mean that like, oh, it's easy. I mean that like we throw the survey away and we don't endorse them, right, when they submit the survey. Because on foreign policy, you know, that's one of the most important things. We get a lot of candidates at the state level that say, oh, I'm running for state office. Look, I'm not going to endorse somebody who's great on all the issues, but they're a neocon. And then in 6 years, we elect them to Congress, right? And we are the ones that promoted them. So we really, and by the way, I think that will be the debate of the GOP is going to be the Dan Crenshaw versus the Rand Paul, the Dan Crenshaw versus the Thomas Massie. That to me is going to be a heart and soul. It's going to be a fiery battle to decide where does the GOP fall on foreign policy. And Trump has kind of shaken all that up. A lot of people have differing opinions on kind of Trump and his foreign policy rhetoric versus action. But I will tell you, that to me is something I'll keep an eye on. How we weigh the different positions on the survey, you know, there's a lot of things we're looking for. Some of the questions are, well, you have to look, there's 50 different states with 50 different sets of current policy. So when it comes to the drug war, right, if you're in a state where it's completely legal to have, you know, to make choices on what drugs you consume or on marijuana, if you put you want to take a step backwards to where it's just, you know, medical, well, that's a problem. But if you put medical and you're in a state like Mississippi, where before November 3rd, it was completely illegal, that's a step in the right direction. So some of them are incremental based on the state that they're in. But, you know, look, we're not looking for people that are milquetoast. I want people that are going to go in credibly and be able to speak about these messages and be able to speak about our ideas in a way that galvanizes people. Because once again, look, we're not saying we have a majority, right? We're getting close in New Hampshire. We think we've got close to 100 folks up there that are pretty aligned. Even folks that we didn't endorse, there's a lot of real good strength up there for liberty. But I think it's really about weighing who you have. And the nice thing, Brad, that saved, I think, or helped Yao, is there's so many candidates. We had over 1,000 people fill out our survey asking for our endorsement this cycle. So we can be selective. If you're a federal group, I feel bad for you. There's only 435 seats plus 100 in the Senate. You're probably going to only have maybe 30 districts that are, you know, competitive. Then you got to find the right Liberty candidates. So no wonder a lot of people sell out or have to at the federal level, because there aren't that many options and you're not going to sit an election cycle out. So it's nice for us that out of 1,000, we only ended up with 153 on the ballot in the general election. So it allows us to be very selective about the type of principal candidates that we're endorsing.
Well, New Hampshire is a really interesting example. I interviewed the governor there about how they have no income tax a while back for the Examiner magazine. And I'm like, oh, I got to move here. And I keep seeing the state legislator going more and more in this like freedom. And also I'm from New England. So to see that happening in my neck of the woods is like the total opposite of the direction of my home states of Massachusetts and Rhode Island. It's so great. But this leads me to kind of my next question. I had our mutual friend Hannah Cox on, and she talked about how a lot of the criminal justice reform legislation she's gone and got passed only passed because of people Yao put in the state house that were willing to vote for it and work on it. So maybe what are the couple key issue areas where you have been able to see some policy changes go through or some bad policies being stopped because you had those liberty legislators in office?
Yeah, so a few examples. And look, every state, this is the unique thing about being for states' rights and being for somebody that believes in decentralization. It's kind of a pain in the ass, right? In practice, as a national group. Am I allowed to say the A word on here? I apologize. But I think it's kind of fascinating for us because we're learning new things in each state, right? There are different environments, there's different sets of rules. But you look at a state like Kentucky, okay, we got one person. In 2018, Savannah Maddox, who is just a lightning rod when it comes to being for liberty and just not holding back. And so what happened was she went in there and she forced a roll call vote on constitutional carry. Now, people think Kentucky, you think conservative, you think red meat, you think, of course, they're a constitutional carry state. No, they aren't. But the Republicans in the House refused to vote on it. And so she forced the vote. And the beautiful thing about that is, you can't call yourself a conservative. You can't be a Republican and then be on record for not supporting constitutional carry. So what happens? It passed. The Senate had already passed it. They've been sitting on it for years. And so Bevin, right before he lost, he signed it. And so now Kentucky is a constitutional carry state. So sometimes, you know, it's not even a trend of like this issue is working. I mean, sometimes you have the ability to show people and force their hands. So that was Kentucky. She also passed the campus free speech bill. That's one of the big things we care about. So a lot of our reps propose those bills. But if you said, you know, what are the different things? We've had some civil asset forfeiture bills, the death penalty bill that Hannah worked on up in New Hampshire. You know, we had some really great people get involved there. And I'd also point to something called the Defend the Guard Act. I don't know if you've ever looked into it. I'd highly recommend there's a group called Bring Our Troops Home. And they have this state bill, which people think state bill. Why is there a state bill on foreign policy? But it's called Defend the Guard Act. And what it is it pretty much holds the governor accountable. So the state legislators and the legislature, they're exerting their power to say, look, you can't send our boys and girls into these countries unless there's a declaration of war. They're talking about the National Guard that the state controls, right? Mm-hmm. So it's actually pretty cool, but that bill, we had 10 different states drop that in the hopper last legislative season. And so we're going to be looking to do that again. But I think that's what you're going to find with these liberty legislators is we're not afraid to be bold. We're not afraid to go all in on some of the issues that usually Republicans or, you know, the milquetoast establishment of both parties doesn't want to touch. And so sometimes it might even just be getting a roll call vote, Brad. Like if we can have a bill to get rid of the income tax in the state, you know, I'd love to see on record who are the squishy Republicans that wouldn't stand up and vote for that, but that run as fiscal conservatives. You know, the dichotomy and the irony, I think exposing hypocrisy is probably one of the biggest things we've been successful at. And I think we're going to continue to do that with the liberty bills that we put up.
Yeah, I think it's a great approach. And that's honestly one of the things that appeals to me about potentially running for state office at some point in my life, when we can convince my boyfriend to let me do it, is that they actually get to do policy, right? Congress now, doesn't really do policy. A handful of people control leadership, and they decide everything. And Amash and Massey have both gone off about this at length, how the leadership controls everything. They decide what gets passed, and everyone else is just kind of a up or down voter. Whereas at the state level, they really get to craft this policy. So it is, I think, a very exciting approach. How do you view it as distinct from, say, the Libertarian Party's approach, or somewhere where they're really going for kind of ideological purism? Because one of the criticisms I'll hear of Yao is, oh, they're not, some of those candidates aren't even libertarian at all, because they don't support legal heroin and being sold to children. Or not, like, I'm kidding, obviously, but I've heard it all.
I've heard it all.
So how do you process that?
Yeah, so I think the reality is, if you look at our coalition, we have kicked out one individual. If you walk into Yao's headquarters in Austin, we have a big X on the wall, because one of our coalition members, you know, voted for a big tax increase. And we're not going to stand for that, right? We're not looking to elect people spending all these resources, our students going into the district, connecting with the community, winning an election. And then, no, you know, you're going to vote for these horrible things. That's the opposite of what we're trying to do. So we're not afraid to hold people accountable. But what I won't tolerate are internet keyboard warriors who want to troll the hard work of our students and act like, you know, oh, that person, I saw a statement from them and they supported Donald Trump. They're not a libertarian. Look, get off your soapbox, okay? I don't give a shit who somebody endorses in a presidential election. I don't care about anything that is tied to if they endorse this. What I care about is policy. What I care about are what is the philosophy and the principles of the person we're endorsing. And so I will hold everybody accountable to what they said in their survey. Okay, our rule was this. The surveys that are submitted to us at YAL are private. They are not public unless you stab us in the back. That is literally how we word it. If you tell us that you will not vote for a tax increase and you do, that's a problem and we'll go public with that. If you tell us you're going to support all these criminal justice reform bills and you don't, then we will go after you with that, right? You read down the line. We've got 30 questions in the survey. So we have a plan in place. It is working. When you have success, you know you're over the target. When people are beating the shit out of you, that's fine. Look, people can have opinions, but this is what I'd say to anyone. If you have a candidate that you want us to endorse, get them to fill out the survey. If you have a problem with a vote that one of our folks has taken, email me, cliff@yaliberty.org. I'd be happy to review a vote. If you think we missed it, or if you think because of that vote, we should be kicking somebody out of the coalition, happy to do that. But I would say I am laser focused on continuing to find these types of candidates. It is very hard to be a viable Liberty candidate, but we have our Liberty Candidate Academies. Brad, I'd love to have you bring the boyfriend. You guys can come out for a day, learn the basics. We say we beat the stupid out of everybody, you know, teaching them how to actually run for office, to be viable, be principled, most importantly, get elected and stay principled. That's what we're doing. So I think the system is working. I think Yao's growth in the meantime, our budget and where we're going reflect the fact that people finally have a plan for Liberty to win. And I would say this, that winning isn't everything, but winning builds excitement. So don't sell out just to win. But one of the things that has happened at Yao is we have realized the best recruitment tactic we have, the best way to get more people to chip in $5 a month, is when we win. Because when you win, you're actually on the field. Okay, I know so many people, they come to me and they say, hey, you know, I'm gonna run for Congress for the sixth time next cycle. What is that doing? Like, what, run it, you know, and they're running as an independent, or they're running under something, you know, whether it's LP, whether it's GOP, whether it's Democrat, they think running for office matters. Yeah, you can spread a message, but at the end of the day, people wanna support a winning message. People want something that galvanizes individuals. And so I've heard for years, there's no money out there for pure liberty, right? Nobody will support it. Bullshit. We are totally defying that at Yao because we are growing by winning, and we are winning with principled folks. And when you do that and you do the hard work, it's not easy. When you do the hard work to prove that it can work, that it can actually lead to success, more people get involved. And I think that's what we're seeing at YAL.
Well, and I'm glad you brought up the question of pro-Trump versus not pro-Trump, because this is one thing that I've not cared about as much as some other people, right? Like, ultimately, like, whether you say you're pro-Trump or not often comes down to more politics and political pressure than anything. How do you vote on policy? Like, Rand Paul is nominally pro-Trump, but votes against him when Trump is pushing non-liberty policies and votes has a very strong libertarian record. At the same time, Justin Amash still had a strong record, even though he was totally anti-Trump on policy votes. So I'm either way, I'm fine with that, right? Because those candidates are still, at the end of the day, pushing forward the policies that we support and that we believe in. So do you think that the whole Trump question has gotten in the way and things might be easier, you know, a few months or 4 years from now when he's kind of moved on to pastures anew?
So I try to tell this, even at the Liberty Candidate Academy, we try to tell everybody, look, if you're running for state office, you think, oh, well, Trump won't come up. Go out and talk to voters, right, leading up to this election. Like, any event that you go to, any voter you talk to, if I call my mom, right, she's even like, you know, oh, Trump said this, you know, what do you think? And Trump is in everybody's mind, right? I literally will walk into political events where I'm speaking and it's like, where are you on Trump, right? Like, I run a youth organization, and like, that is where people's heads are. So it has definitely been at the forefront, you know, as something that people are curious about. My rule is this: look, if Trump supports liberty, I'll praise him. If Trump doesn't support liberty, I'm not happy to say he's wrong. You know, I'm not afraid to say he's wrong. I don't understand. So many people, it just becomes they're all in or they're all out. And I think that's a major problem. And it's a problem, too, for those that, you know, when you praise him, it's some sort of sellout because, you know, he's not good on these other issues. Look at Yao's page. Look at my page. Look at what we put out. If AOC says something that is in line with liberty, right, I'm not afraid to put that out. And we all should be principled about that. When you get into the identity politics of somebody's name having more influence over their ideas or the things they're saying, that's a lose for everybody. So we're focused on that. And the rule I have with kind of our national team is, look, every time the government makes a decision, every time the government takes action, we're either moving towards tyranny or we're moving towards freedom and liberty. We need to always be moving towards freedom and liberty. And that can mean praising different people. It can mean supporting certain policies. And it really, to me, comes down to that. Are you willing to praise somebody when they support liberty? And, you know, are you willing to call them out when they don't and say that's incorrect? And I think if you keep that consistency over the years, it makes life a lot easier because you're not trying to juggle, you know, kind of this grifter status of like, you know, who are we all in on today? I'm all in on liberty all the time. And I think the more people do that, the more they'll have success.
So let me ask you this then, because in order to get these candidates elected, you've had to appeal to voters who aren't all like doctrinaire libertarians or aren't all already on the liberty train. So how do you sell kind of a like liberty Republican candidate just to average voters who are libertarian on some issues, they're not on, maybe not on other issues, or they don't have a great understanding of those principles? What's the best pitch that you've been successful with?
Well, I think that everybody believes in the principles of liberty. Most Americans, I do believe that. I think it's this farce when people say, oh, you know, those libertarian principles, you know, you guys only have 1 or 2% of the population. No, I think the candidates, you know, we have a political system that might make that picture become something that people think is reality, but I don't buy it. Most people don't think the government should take 30 cents for every dollar you make. Most people don't think we should have troops in 120 plus countries. Most people don't think the government should be spying on us and looking at our emails and our bank statements. Most people just want to be left the hell alone. That's great. That's our message, right? That resonates, that connects. So it's up to us to go out and reach people with that message. And so when we have candidates, one of the things that we train them on is, look, figure out which liberty issues are going to connect the best with your community. And so the reason the Liberty Republican vehicle has worked so well is because there are a few things that happen. Like, look, I'd endorse a Democrat if they believed in actually cutting government and giving power back to the people. We actually were really close in New Hampshire. We had a woman who was very close to getting our endorsement, but her opponent in the primary, you know, pretty much got her to say she does not support a 50, not 15, a $50 minimum wage. And it's like, that's a problem, because unless you want to lie and say you do, like, that disqualifies you in a Democrat primary in certain areas, right? Like, you can't win, because to them, it's an issue of supporting the people. Or, you know, this is the problem you run into under the Democrat label. But under the Liberty Republican label, you can run for cutting taxes to zero. You can run on getting rid of all regulations. You can run on cutting government spending dramatically. I mean, you can zero things out, and the heart and the base of the Republican Party has that anti-government kind of limited anti-establishment type mentality. And you can resonate with that. You can connect with that. A Liberty message can win in those circles. And you don't have to hold back. That's the best part. Now, you might be in a community where maybe criminal justice reform makes sense to message. You might be in a community where, you know, they're tired of war and it makes sense to message that. But once again, state legislative races, most people have no idea who their state representative is. So it's really about making yourself a formidable candidate, presenting yourself in a way that is connecting with the voters. And so it's figuring out little ways to take the liberty issues and get some, you know, bite-sized messaging out to the voters. But a lot of this, I tell people, look, the local soccer coach gets elected as the state representative. Why can't we have a local soccer coach who's also, you know, believes in libertarian principles, right? Like, all you have to do is find these folks and then train them, because most of the times it's whoever the next guy in line is. Let's make the next guy in line the liberty guy. And that's what we're doing through Operation Win at the Door, and it's working.
All right. Well, I know we're going to wrap in just a minute, so I'm going to ask you the big question that everybody must answer when they come on my podcast. What is your hot food take that will ignite controversy with the listeners?
All right. So I told you I got some iced coffee just so we'd be in tune here with the Brad Palumbo mandate of iced coffee. So my wife, my friends, everybody makes fun of me because I am a glutton for blueberry coffee at Dunkin' Donuts. I feel like a lot of things in my life are, you know, you're pretty standard or contrarian, or, you know, try to be a tough guy. And it's like, no, I'm not afraid to say that blueberry coffee from Dunkin' Donuts is America's coffee. And, I still get looks, you know, to this day, but it's the best thing out there. It's the best coffee. That blueberry taste brings me back to my Philadelphia roots, and everybody should try it before they knock it.
I'm going to try it. I don't know that I've had that. Obviously, I'm a Dunkin' fan. I grew up in Massachusetts and Rhode Island. So everybody, that's it. So try that blueberry coffee next up. Cliff, thanks so much. All right, everybody, that's it for today. Thanks for tuning in. And if you like the show, make sure you're subscribed on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Go ahead and leave us a rating and review on iTunes as well if you can. It really helps. And we'll talk again next week.
You are listening to Breaking Boundaries with Brad Palumbo.